Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, home of the ambitious upstart. Hey, Chris, to the editor, please, let's bring Chris on board right now, and I'll do a quick intro, and we'll go over what we're going to talk about in this interview. I'm going to try a different approach. This is Chris Brisson.
Look at Brisson.
That. Brisson. Got to go French. He is the founder of Calloop, which allows you to send voice and text messages to your contacts. The best way to think of it is it's like MailChimp for mobile messaging. Chris and I are going to be talking about a bunch of things, including how he bootstrapped to hundreds of thousands of dollars in sales, you know, from no money, just kept going and clawing his way up to the top. We'll find out how he did it. We're going to hear about the marketing ideas that he copied from other people and that you and I might want to actually copy from him because he's gotten a long way with them. And we're going to take those ideas that you can actually copy, not those theoretical ideas that are cool, but, you know, not directly applicable to you. And we're also going to talk about how to get software developed if you're an entrepreneur with a great idea, but no coding skills. Chris, is that you? Did you not have any coding skills?
I can create web pages.
All right. If you can create web pages, but not create software.
I still can't program. I don't want to learn.
He doesn't want to learn it. Good. This is basically not even an overview. Some of the big ideas we'll talk about in this interview. And I should say right at the top, thank you to my sponsor. Chris, do you know by now who the sponsor is?
Mr. Walker.
Yes.
I'm going to say Shopify.
Right. Shopify is out.
Those
There's
are
only one
the
sponsor
ones.
To keep it short. I still love Shopify, but the person who pays me now is Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. He is the entrepreneur's lawyer. Right? You don't want like a lawyer who represents a circus one day, the plumber the next day, and by the way, sometimes a startup when he thinks that he can get some shares and get rich. You want a guy who knows the business. Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. All right, Chris, let's get right into it, all right?
Let's do it.
All right, I want to start with getting really personal with you. So you're in software, but you watch people like me, you told me before we started, who sell nothing but information. And how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, the thing is, I actually came from information publishing, you know, that business. So, you know, the last time we talked about my RIM business, which was totally physical. And then after I sold that company, I vowed to myself never again to sell physical big stuff. And I transitioned into information. And, you know, information is always the easiest, or the way I look at it, it's an easy business to get into with less moving parts. And, you know, getting into software, it's a little more difficult than people make it seem to be, especially if you don't have any technical skills. So, you know, looking at information business, is your website up? Can you accept payments? And, you know, is your link working? So, you know, software, especially when you're dealing with text messaging and mobile messaging and voice messages, it's a lot more, there's a lot more moving parts to it. So that's for sure.
You actually told me about a specific friend whose name we won't mention who was making what? How was he doing compared to you as you were struggling?
He's doing good. You know, at the end of the day, you have three employees and you're making millions and millions of dollars in net money, like straight to the bank. And so, you know, being an entrepreneur, you question that stuff. Are you doing the right thing? Are you building the right business? Is this the right vehicle to get to the end result? And, you know,
what is the end result for you?
You know, I think, you know, the end result for me, I think, is to build a real business, to, you know, to have good people around you that you can grow. You can build something together and you can build a real company that, you know, can
for what?
Produce.
That doesn't seem like an end. That seems like a means. Is the end to have a jet? Is the end to be richer than this friend? Is the end to, I don't know what, to feed people in starving parts of the world? What's your end?
No, the end is to build something that you can essentially walk away from.
I see.
You know, I think to build a business, to not to be that cog in the wheel, but to build something that literally you can walk away from and let it generate sales for you so you don't have to be there every single day grinding it out. And hey, luckily, hopefully one day you can sell, exit, and then take a step back and actually do the next thing. So, you know, I think for me, it's definitely building a business that I can step away from, or at least find somebody to replace me to grow the business. or exit the company, right? I think, you know, when you're building a software business, you know, it's either you're doing it for the lifestyle, or you're doing it to build something huge to sell out, right? At least in the software business, I would say.
Okay. So. Yeah, last time you were on here, we talked about how you sold rims for cars, and you were doing this while you were in school. Yeah. And the interview, of course, is up on Mixergy. Anyone can go and look up Chris's past interview. Back then, Chris, I'm a friend of yours, and I still back then said, you know what, Chris, we can't talk about Call Loop. It's too early. We have to focus on the rim business because it has a beginning, middle, and an end. It's a success story of sorts, right? I thought it was a success story. I don't know that you felt it at the time. Today, the business is doing well. And so, like a friend with an ulterior motive, I come back to you and I say, friend, will you come here and let me do an interview? Because now I want it. And you said, no. And anyway, you pushed me off for a bit and you finally said, yes. Where are the revenues right now?
Nice approach, huh? It's good. You know, this year we're looking to be about $750,000. So I'm excited that at the end of the end of the year we can definitely reach that. So
where were you,
you know,
last
it's exciting
year?
To get there. No, nowhere close. You know,
were you below, under 400,000 last year?
Yeah, easily.
You were. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
And this year, so, what's your run rate?
It's about that. Yeah, it's about 750.
Okay. So. And so you don't have like highs where towards the end of the year you expect to do much more than now, right?
No, I think we're on track. You
okay.
know, if everything remains the same, we'll stay at that rate.
Okay, so we're talking over 50,000 in sales a month so far.
Yeah, give or take. Yeah.
Okay. Recurring revenue. By give or take, you mean
sometimes.
Does it average it out?
No, I mean some months are better than the other. Well, I'd say, you know, the last couple months we've been growing. You know, what's interesting is, you know, the recurring side of the business is not a huge part of it, which, you know, just simple systems we haven't built into Call Loop yet. But yeah, I mean, most of the business is...
I'm surprised. Is it because people sign up for the free package? Because free is pay as you go, 5 cents per message. Everything else is a per monthly fee, kind of like the example that I gave at the top of the interview, MailChimp, where with the basic pro and max packages, I pay $29 a month, $49 a month, or $99 a month, respectively. But
yep.
So is free that much more popular?
Well, you know, text messaging is not like it's not like email marketing. So you have certain types of businesses that like a budget, and then you have certain types of businesses that like scalability to it. So, you know, the market that we go after has scalability to it. So they don't want to be stuck in saying, I only have 250 messages or 500 messages. So, you know, we've been working our model and just changing things over. We're just about to change over to a new kind of pricing model, some new things with it. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. The you know, we have a lot of people that pay multiple times per month. You know, probably 3 months ago, we had a guy pay 46 times in 1 month.
But he still prefers that to monthly fees that might be lower because he doesn't want the contract.
Yeah, it's not about the contract. It's like, look, we send a lot of messages.
I see.
You know, the monthly doesn't work for us. So we just want to be able to use the platform and scale, you know, because it's all, a lot of people will build it into, for example, you know, we have so many different segments. So, you know, one segment is marketers. So marketers have funnels, they have systems, and, you know, to be capped at a certain amount of messages, and we don't cap anybody, but they want the ability just to consistently kind of replenish credits. It's kind of like a Twilio model. You know, with Twilio, you set up your card, and we have an auto charge mechanism. So
I see.
You know, they can use it as they go, use it as they choose, and you know, it works.
All right, look at me. I'm supposed to actually not start with. I have a coach for my interviews, and he said, look, do not start with the revenue. Make it like a build up so that people are wondering how well this guy does, and then go to the revenue. And now I'm realizing the other reason not to do it is that I'm starting off by making you uncomfortable, by digging into your finances, which is frankly a very personal thing to do. I think because I ask it so much, the audience feels like, well, there's another throwaway question that Andrew. No, this is a personal thing to do, right?
I'd say so.
I mean, think
can
so.
You see me squirming in my seat?
No, but I should be starting off by making you feel more comfortable and then going to that. All right. The way you learn is by trying different things. So let's move on to the things that have been tried and true. Here's the way I like to get to know someone, their background. One of the things that you did before, as you said, you were helping information product companies. You took, for example, a raw food client that had an outdated DVD course and was printing manuals at Kinko's. And what did you do for him when you ran your previous company, which was Power Launch Consulting?
Yeah, so, you know, starting that company was definitely, I've learned a lot about marketing and didn't have a product of my own at the time to really push the marketing to the edge and put together a full-blown, like, product launch. Mm-hmm. So this one client, I actually interviewed him maybe a year before, and I was like, you know what? Let me put together a product launch for somebody. And so I thought of him, and he had a great product. He had a small list, maybe 5,000 people, and come to find out, he was printing the DVDs, printing the manuals, like doing all the work. And he was living in a sharecropper's cabin in Georgia. You know, it was a raw food guy, so. But he had a great product and he had a good audience. And so I came in there and just with good marketing, he would just send out every week the same HTML email that everybody just kind of, you know, you got conditioned to know it's the same stuff. So starting in January, we did the deal in December, and essentially within 3 days, I put together a campaign and basically did kind of a scratch and dent sale. He had all this inventory, all this stuff. I said, look, we need to clear this stuff out and let's generate some money so we can move on to actually outsource and get all this stuff produced. So in 3 days, put together a promotion, did a survey, just did some really good marketing. And in 3 days, we did about $14,000 in sales. He was doing like $500 or $1,000 a month. So we did that in 3 days and he was blown away. And I was blown away, you know, but I knew good marketing can do that. And so we took that money. I basically completely automated this guy's business, got all the DVDs, all the books, you know, redesigned. We packaged it. He had 33 DVDs he would ship. So we compiled it down, put it into, I believe, a 10-set DVD with a book and a manual and all that stuff. Really beautiful. Completely outsourced it with disc.com and set him up. And we did a launch. And we ended up doing a full-blown product launch. And, you know, we got... It was awesome. It was kind of the first big product launch we did, and I think we did 135,000 in 45 days. So it was pretty cool, and that was an information product. And you know, from that, took that same kind of campaign and took that same product launch kind of system, and then did it for another client, and we did 107,000 in a week using that same kind of product launch formula, if you will.
Wow. No wonder it's frustrating to build up the software company slowly when there's so much money in information product. Give me, I know automation is one of your things, and I was hoping to get that into this interview, but I don't think we'll be able to squeeze automation in. Maybe you can tell me about one automation technique that you used with the raw foods company that we might be able to learn from and apply today.
Good Lord. This is 2008. Yes. I knew nothing about Infusionsoft. We used one shopping cart, we used AWeber, we used all that stuff. But I think the biggest thing, you know, the automation side of it that I applied to his business was he was doing the work. And, you know, the fulfillment company printed the CDs, they shipped it to the customer. Any refunds that came through, they went to the fulfillment company. And so, you know, he stepped away from that to where he didn't have to do any of the work. So any sale that came in, boom, it automatically went to the fulfillment center. They shipped it out, and that was it. And so literally it's like, okay, you know, you can just produce sales and not have to do the hard work of, you know, what you thought you had to do. So, you know, for me, that was the big thing. But more importantly, it was like putting together the right product launch. And I learned this stuff from Jeff Walker, so at Product Launch Formula. And this stuff works, and we actually like got it to work. And I remember, you know, on launch day, we were just like, oh, it worked. It was really cool because it actually worked. You know, I think we did the first day like $23,000 in sales. I was like, holy crap. It's just cool, you know. And so when you take, you know, wow, you know, you can do hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in very quickly selling information. Where not a lot of things can go wrong, and then you try and apply that to software when, you know, like with Call Loop, I feel like I, not anymore because things have changed. We've kind of solidified the platform, but in many respects, it's like I can slam the gas and have to hold back because things break and this didn't work. And, you know, there's a lot more moving parts to it than
I want to get to how you did that, because it does seem like, well, if this product launch formula worked for software, for information products, it should work for software. By the way, I see you took your hands off your desk. I appreciate that, actually. You have a great mic, but for some reason, when you touch your desk, the mic picks up on the sound. So it's helpful that you don't bang down, which kind of sucks because I want you to be natural and animated. I want you to be to be the guy who bangs on the table. Speaking of automation, you're saying the things that he did manually, you helped him outsource to a company that would automate for him. I want to skip ahead just for a moment. You heard that Wufoo, the survey company and the form company, did something that you and your current company have copied and automated. Can you tell people what you did?
Yeah, so this really goes to a book I read probably in 2005. It's called How to Sell Anything to Anybody, and it's by a guy named Joe Girard. Turns out Joe Girard knows a thing or two about selling, and he sold 13,001 cars in like a 5-year span. He won the Guinness Book of World Records and still holds that today. And, you know, he wrote a book about it. So, you know, I read it, and one of the strategies he talks about is what he would do every month without fail is he would write a handwritten thank you note to every single one of his customers. Now, obviously, he didn't do all the work. He had a whole team that would do it. And I never forgot that, because I was like, wow, it's so simple. If that
worked
for him.
Wait, he didn't actually write those notes?
No way. He couldn't do it. Originally, he did, but he had a whole team that would write the notes for him. So, so I thought, hey, you know, and I never forgot that. I was like, wow, it's such a simple strategy, but it works. And so, you know, when Call Loop came around, it actually gave me a real reason to start applying some of these offline strategies. And you know, I remember seeing Wufoo, I think it was probably 2008, 2009, where, you know, they got all this press about how they were writing handwritten thank you cards. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like people are going nuts over this simple strategy that I think everybody should do. The problem comes in is, like, you know, if you're a small company, you know, you have to do it, and you only have so much time in the day to actually do it. And so with Call Loop, I kind of automated and outsourced that. So originally I would write the thank you notes for every new customer that would come in. And, you know, when I would send these out, I would get people that would post on Twitter, post on Facebook, you know, tag me on it. And just that small little gesture went a long way for, you know, the stick strategy side of things, but also, you know, the goodwill, kind of that wow factor that Zappos applies. And so anyhow, outsource that. I have a woman that manually does that for us. And, you know, I pay her 35 cents a piece, and she stamps it, hand addresses it, and does it all.
So she just gets an email with contact information every time you make a sale. She sits down and writes it. Does she write it from Chris?
No, she writes it from as a team member.
Gotcha. So all right, that makes sense. Yep. Okay.
Every week she gets a batch, and just throughout the week she sends it out.
I do it. I've got these cards right here at my desk. I hand do them. And you're right, it takes a long time, but I kind of feel like maybe that's the power of it.
Well, you know, you may have a personal touch with everybody, right? After you interview somebody or talk to somebody, they talk to you, but to do business with a company, it's a little bit different. And so, you know, they don't need me, they don't need my signature, but they just want, hey, welcome to the team, you know, from somebody on the
team.
Nobody
cares.
Yep.
All right, that makes sense. There's a point for software. I think in software, that's much easier to do. Then, so you had this launch. We actually, frankly, I don't think we should spend too much time on it, but you kind of got screwed. You didn't get as much of your consulting fee as you should have, not because of this client, but because of a partner. But you then had a frustration that led to Call Loop. What's the frustration?
Yeah, so we're doing, you know, doing these launches, and, you know, I kind of like to take a step back and use all these different channels. So, you know, we were doing we're doing teleseminars at the time. Email marketing is easy because you can automate that with Aweber. You know, we were trying to just add every component, and we were trying to do voice broadcasting, which text messaging really wasn't available back then, or at least wasn't a channel that you could easily kind of implement. And so what I wanted to do was add that just to a marketing channel. The problem was is we would have to export our list from AWeber, clean it in Excel, you know, sort, sift, and then import that into a system to send out a call. And so I thought, hey, you know, there's got to be a better way. How can we automate this, you know, process, or how can we build our own list automatically with AWeber or with One Shopping Cart? So as we're building our customer list, we can build our mobile list at the same time. And so just, you know, not having that out there, I thought, hey, you know, let me build it. And from that, just start with an idea and, you know, kind of spawn through that, and then gets into finding a partner and, you know,
let's take it slow and understand it. You found a company to create a prototype for you. How did it go to have them prototype you? How did it go to have them create a prototype for you?
Well, I didn't have a company actually prototype the product. What I did was I found a company that provided an API for voice messaging,
okay,
and reached out to them and said, hey, here's what I want to do. Do you have any developers that are efficient or proficient with your API? And they hooked me up with this guy, Ronnie. And after a couple conversations, you know, told me idea and, you know, is it possible? And, you know, we kind of got to feel each other out over about 3 months. And I said, hey, man, I can't do this alone, but what I can do is I can do all the marketing, I can do the sales, you know, all that stuff. And he's a developer. And so we essentially partnered up and started Call Loop and started the company.
I see. Okay. And if you would have hired him, you would have gone broke. You didn't have enough money to pay for a full-time strong developer. But as a partner, he got a piece of the business, you got a piece of the business, and you can work together and not have to spend as much on salary.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't an easy undertaking, and I knew that. You know, I would go broke trying to build it myself or hiring developers. And at that time, I didn't know much about, you know, building software. And so it was kind of my first stint in building like real software. You know, I'd build little apps or little scripts and stuff, but nothing that was actually a software as a service. And, mm-hmm. you know, he could build that back end technology to make it work.
I understand why he might want to partner with you. You have the marketing experience and you could bring that in. But he still has to commit a lot of work in order to be partners with you. Was there ever a time, Chris, as you were building it, that you thought, oh, I feel so bad for having brought him in here because we're not doing as well as fast as I thought, because it's more difficult than we expected?
You know, I knew it was going to take time to build an actual product. And so, you know, I was working on other projects. He was working full-time at a company. And so we both knew going into it, it's like, hey, you know, this is going to be an investment of time. And, you know, it's not something we can flip the switch in 30 days. You know, and this is 2010, you know, getting started into it. And so, you know, we just both know it was going to take a little bit of time to build it out. So it wasn't like, you know, we both knew that it was going to be probably at least a year to build this thing out, to get to a good prototype, moonlighting through the process. You know, and I didn't know anything about startups or funding or, you know, or anything like that. I just knew, hey, I can build a product and promote it and sell it and launch it, but it's software. It's a little bit different. So
I want to hear about the difficulty there. I also have in my research here a screenshot of what the page looked like back when you created the business. I think that was 2009 is when you launched?
No, we launched in 2011. You know, we had Call Loop. We didn't actually launch the product because we didn't have a product. We were building it for that long.
2011. All right, let me come back to this in a moment because I'm looking at something here on my screen that I want to ask you about. But first, I have to thank Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. Chris, what do you think of me doing the spot a little bit at the front and then the longer version in here as opposed to starting off with... You prefer this
good
way?
Transition. Yeah, it's a good transition.
All right.
Yeah.
Scott Edward Walker is the entrepreneur's lawyer. Chris, instead of me plugging Scott, do you have any legal advice for entrepreneurs? I don't mean like what they should do legally, but who they should talk to, any mistake they should avoid. What do you think?
Oh, Lord. you're getting funding, getting a C corp. Get a C corp.
Did you look for funding?
If you're getting funding.
Is that what you guys are?
We are C corp.
You are C corp. Are you looking for funding?
We're an LLC, but we switched to a C corp.
Okay. All right. I think I'm getting some kind of answer within the answer. Let me suggest this, guys. If you need a lawyer, and you're a startup, talk to Scott Edward Walker. Give him a vision of where you're planning to take the company. Based on that, he can help you figure out whether you want to be an LLC or C corp or something else. And the reason is, as Chris is saying, there is no right answer. You can't say, what do I do? Do I get an LLC or C corp? It depends on where you're going in the future. And that's just one of many questions that will depend on where you're going in the future. Now, who's going to know what kind of questions to ask you so that he could figure out where you're going in the future and what you need to do today to prepare? A lawyer with experience, of course. Duh. That's actually in the script. He wrote that. He said, please include duh. So, go to Scott Edward Walker. He is the startup's lawyer. He's seen so much of what you're about to experience, so he can help you prepare for it. He's also the guy who, as you build your business, get funding, sell your business, do other things along the way, could act as, is consigliere the right word? Maybe consigliere after the Godfather is not a word that a lawyer wants attached to him. Why don't I say as an advisor? So, if you need a lawyer who can help you out both legally and maybe even be a sounding board as you build your business, start off right, go to Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you're already established and you're ready to get funding or you're ready to sell or you're ready to do those big transactions, you know who to call, right? Scott. Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. What do you think of that, Chris?
I think it was good.
All right. Thank
well,
you.
Well played, my friend.
You know what? The internet gives me such a feedback loop that now in real life I need a feedback loop. You know, like I sent out a tweet on Buffer and I saw, oh, look at that. Sunday tweets get you 330 clicks. That's good feedback, you know? So now if I say something, like if I tell a joke to my wife a few minutes later, I'll go back and go, what do you think? Was that a funny one? That was a good one, right? Like, I need the feedback. So, same thing here. When the interview will get published, I'll see, did I do a good job? Is it okay? I get that feedback. I need the immediate feedback for all my sponsorship. Let me ask you another question and be prepared to answer the follow-up question to this next question, which will be, what do you think of the question? here's the next question. All kidding aside here, I am looking at Callcast, a website that was up in 2009, a website that says voice broadcast follow-ups with the click of a button, one that says simple five-minute setup, and there's very little on the site besides that except for integration seamlessly with AWeber, iContact, Constant Contact, Lyris, whoa, one shopping cart, and many more. So was this business yours, or did you acquire the domain?
No, actually, we got really lucky. So when we were coming up with names, Callcast was just the name that we thought we were going to be. And then we're like, yeah, I really like it. And we found Call Loop. And surprisingly, it was available. So we picked it up for a whopping $8. And we got lucky. In fact, we own the 3 L's and we own the 2 L's. And which actually, the 2 L's actually dropped. And we picked that up for $20 or something, or $60. So we got really lucky. You know, a buddy of mine, Chad Fulkening, he runs Domain Holdings. He goes, you know, man, I used to own Call Loop like back in 2005. He's a huge domainer. He has like 15,000 domain names. So I was like, oh, I bought a bunch of Loop domain names, and I think Call Loop was one of them. So we got really lucky.
Oh, here's what I'm looking at. Let me show you my research. It says that there was a site on callloop.com, as you'll see if you click on that, called Callcast.
Yeah, that was our original.
That was your original site, right? So maybe it's just miscategorized, and it actually is not from 2008, but from 2009, but from later.
Yeah, and that was just a landing page. We had nothing. That was just, let's throw up a page, kind of like your you know, just
MVP sort of
page, if you will. Yep.
And so the idea was to get people to click that big green sign up button while you were building.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is actually back in 2006, we created a marketing system for this company, and basically we set up a coming soon page. You know, I knew nothing about like marketing or anything like that back then, and we built a list of like maybe 500 people, and the day we launched this thing, we ended up getting 150 people to pay us $20 a month for this thing. So I'm like, we got to do the same thing. So that's where that came from. And again, this is pre, you know, anything about, you know, coming soon pages or launch pages or anything like that. It was just, let's just start building leads now. So when it comes time to launch, we can actually let people know.
Okay. What'd you think of that question? Good one.
Yeah, I'm good. Brings us back to the beginning.
I'm goofing around. I do see, by the way, that you are banging the table, and okay. Just it's like even small taps sound bigger on that great mic. What do you have? Right. That's a Blue Yeti.
Yeah,
good mic. I think it's got multiple settings. One setting is will pick up all the sound around you. The other one will pick up only the sound that's directly in front of the mic, and I think that's the difference. But I obviously can't even tell you the names of the settings, so I can't tell you how to fix it.
I wish I knew too. I have no idea what to do.
Okay. So now you got a developer, you have a marketing strategy, you know to throw up ahead of when most people knew to throw up a landing page that just collected email addresses. You knew to do that. You had experience doing it. What's the problem then?
With what?
With the launch. Where you were mentioning earlier that it's not as easy as launching a content business. It's not as easy as people from the outside who just watch entrepreneurs seemingly make it overnight. It's not as easy as those guys think it is. So can you talk a little bit about the struggle before the launch or the struggle even at the launch?
Yeah, I mean, we were building a small... Oh, there you go.
Wait, so there we were I go. Building... What was that?
That's our little chime for when we do a sale. So it keeps me motivated throughout the day.
So every time you get a sale, that cash register sound goes off.
Yep, and we use Woopra, so pretty cool analytics company. Cool. So I guess back to your question is, you know, we were building a list, and you know, I was wanting to just put something together to launch this out, and you know, being you know, moonlighting, building this software company. And that's things. I could build the web pages. I built all that stuff out. But the software back end was with Ronnie, my co-founder. And, you know, I was waiting to all right, let's launch it. But, you know, launch it was kind of well, what do you mean? You can't do a huge product launch to launch this. And who's the market? It's not, it was a lot broader than an audience than, you know, dialing in on one particular market. And so, you know, every time I'd kind of push a little bit, this would break. Every time I push a little bit, this would break. And we'd have to go back and fix and go back and fix.
Give an example of something that broke that was especially painful back then?
Oh, geez, just sending a message.
Okay.
Sending anything, you know. And again, we were in beta for about a year. So when we launched in beta in 2011, we were in beta for about a year, maybe give or take a little more over a year. And so during that time, we were just putting it out there. You know, we were generating a little bit of money, not a lot, but we were fixing the software and just fixing it and tweaking it and fixing it. And we're fixing, adding small little features here and there. And so, you know, in many respects, we haven't really truly done a huge blowout launch. Just because we never really went back to doing that, just because it's kind of organic right now. Now, we could take a step back and launch maybe, you know, to a certain particular market and put together a whole, you know, product launch for that market and how they can use the product best and, you know, laser focus on those specific people and do that. And so, you know, with software, I mean, what I learned was, and I got very frustrated because I couldn't flex my muscles. You know, so it's like, guys, let's go. You know, I remember hearing something, I don't know, probably a year and a half ago, where it's like, you know, the marketing people aren't really going to do much for the first 6 months to a year. And it's like, that was me. I'm wanting to flex my muscles and market this thing. And we couldn't simply because you don't want to go out there showing a system that wasn't fully functioning, fully working. So we were in beta for a while and, you know, we decided to take that label off after things were a lot better.
Did you use Twilio to send out your text messages, or are they too expensive for this?
No, we use Twilio for our backend.
Yeah. To this day,
you know, and going into it, we didn't want to build hardware. You know, because that was a huge proposition to get into, and so, you know, at the time there wasn't necessarily a Twilio platform. Actually, I met Jeff in Miami in 2009 or something, when the idea of Callloop came to be, and Twilio was just getting started, and which has been obviously very cool to see them like grow into this massive, huge company. But Twilio was kind of like, oh my gosh, there's a company that does this. And it was like a saving grace for us rather than having to go direct to an aggregator and, you know, do invest more capital, which we didn't have to spend, to get that infrastructure built. So,
Jeff Lawson, the founder of Twilio, that's the guy you met. What did you do then for the first year while you were waiting for the product to get built?
Oh, Lord. I think the product development side of stuff, you know, it was, building out the site and, trying to keep it just very lean. You know, how can we get to actually creating the product and generating some momentum with it? Frankly, from the marketing side, I didn't really do a lot. It was more of like the product and, what do we do here? And, just kind of fleshing all that stuff out. And so, it was really just kind of building the product, building the membership site. And, fortunately I can build web pages, but I don't know why I did it. We just had to do it.
What's the membership site?
Callloop, access.
You weren't
like
building
members
it.
Area and everything, yeah.
You mean by building it, you mean what you were working on was the HTML part of it, the design of the page that people would see when they were customers, and I see.
Yep.
Where did you get your first customer?
I believe it was at, where did we get our first customer? It was just through the network from some real estate investor guys.
Okay.
They wanted to use it because actually it was at an event in Tampa, and Gary Vaynerchuk was part of this little mastermind group, and he came down and I revealed Callloop. Like, hey guys, here's what we're working on. It wasn't a working product at all. But these guys are like, oh my God, I need that. And that's when I knew, like, cool, we've got a product that people want and need and will pay for. And so we launched that initial group of real estate investors that were doing, webinars and teleseminars and those type of events. They were the first customers from that.
So how are they using it?
A lot of different ways. Originally, and still a lot of our customers use it for webinars, for teleseminars, to drive more people to their webinars. A lot of these guys make their generate a majority of their income and revenue from events, from webinars, from teleseminars.
Right, so someone would see their phone number. What's the flow actually? People would actually call into your software on their number?
No. So you
do outbound calls to their customers, right?
They would set up. They would send a text or send a voice message reminder to people. So you sign up, let's say, for a go-to webinar, and you put your first name, your last name, your email, and your phone number. Mm-hmm. So, the big problem that they have is, hey man, I'm getting 1,000 people to sign up, but like 100 are showing up. So they can send only so many emails, and so hey, I need a better way. Let's use voice. Let's use text. And so, 20, 30, 40, 50% increase in attendance. When they have more people, means they generate more cash.
Gotcha.
So so they can automate that with Callloop. So people can sign up for their webinar, they can put it into Callloop, and then send out a text, an hour before or 30 minutes before the webinar starts.
So, you said text. The first version, was it voice only?
Yeah, it was voice only.
So they would have a phone call go out to their people saying, this webinar is going to start, and it would just play a recording.
Yep.
When did you get into text, or what made you get into text, I should say?
It was the obvious solution. It was the obvious next step. People wanted it. People were asking for it. And we finally built into it. It was probably maybe, I'd say, 8 months later. 8 months, we finally built text into that. And we do, 75% text, 25% voice. So, and that's been true ever since we launched it. So,
can you give me those numbers again? The connection is somehow a little bit weird today.
So 75% is text.
Text.
Okay. And 25% is voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
How'd you get your next batch of customers after the mastermind?
Yeah, I mean, just through the network. You know, again, I wasn't doing any sort of marketing or blogging. You know, knowing what I know now, man, I would have done a whole different approach. But it really just came through the network. You know, other people told other people, and you know, just kept kind of
snowballing. What would you have done differently?
I would have definitely done like a Mint.com. You know, what they did leading up to the launch of their software. You know, going out to target markets, creating content. You know, writing blog posts. You know, networking with certain outlets. You know, just building up the buzz in the marketing and providing value to the market way before we launched. We didn't do that. I didn't do that. And you know, looking back, I think we would have done a bigger launch from it. You know, with having a larger lift.
How do you do that when you have so many issues as a software company where things aren't going to work when you first launch them, where you know all the things that you were talking to me about happen?
You get mad a lot.
But would it have been possible to do a Mint-style launch where you do a lot of content marketing and outreach before you fully launch, build up your list, and then launch to it?
You know, we could have built the list, but I think we would have done a very slow opening of beta spots. You know, getting the buzz out there and just putting it out there as much as possible to build that list and slowly allowing people to come in so you can fix the problems.
Gotcha.
Before opening the pipe to everybody. And, you know, obviously they had funding. And so, you know, going into it, we didn't have any funding. And so we could only move so quick and so fast before, you know, like getting things done essentially. So they could move quick and they could launch in a big way and have it all done. We didn't have that luxury. So
I should say that we did a session here on Mixergy with Rob Walling, who created multiple software products, including Hittail, where he talked about how he did a launch and how he's done multiple launches for software. And it is a different process. There is no one who really does the product launch for software. The closest I can come to it is Rob Walling, who's created multiple software multiple web apps, who's taught other people how to do it and marketed them. And I'm really proud that he's part of Mixergy Premium. If you're a premium member, go check out Rob Walling. If you're not, sign up to mixergypremium.com. There are a lot of highs and lows. You told April Dykeman in our pre-interview here at Mixergy that one of the things you learned from your dad, who had restaurants while you were growing up, was the massive highs and the massive lows that you should expect as an entrepreneur and how to deal with them. What was his lowest that you knew as an entrepreneur that this is what you could potentially face?
Oh, boy. You know, I would say probably in the last five to 8 years, it's been tough. You know, it's been really tough. You know, my dad sold his restaurants in 2001, and kept investing in bad business, and it's come to bite him in the butt.
What do you
mean? You know, I think just investing in the wrong business idea that necessarily didn't have a plan for generating revenue.
You have an example.
Well, you know, he kept investing in this company called Recobond. It was his company, but it was a housing system. And, you know, he just was pumping money into this, but wasn't generating any sales. And so after just, you know, it was just shocking. It was like, Dad, you know, what's the business? How is it growing? Who's your customers? You know, knowing what I know now, looking back, it's like, holy cow, you know. You're missing like the core elements. And I think he went from doing restaurants to something he knew nothing about, and jumped into an industry where he wasn't a builder. He didn't have any experience in it, and come to bite him in the butt. And you know, I think so. You know, I've learned a lot of lessons just seeing that, and just investing in a bad idea for way too long and not killing it too soon. You know, I should have killed it a long time ago. When the results weren't there. But
so Chris, I talk with my audience about this a lot. How do you know when to kill it and when not? Sometimes you see an entrepreneur like you who it took a year to really get the full product out there,
who some entrepreneurs halfway through that year would say, maybe this is not the right place and I'm pushing more money out the door. And other entrepreneurs would say, stick with it, because if you do, then you'll finally make it. Look at what happened to you. So how do you know when to keep pushing it and when it's just not going to work out and you should stop and cut your losses?
You know, there's been a lot of times where it's like, what am I doing? Is this the right thing? Is this the right vehicle? And again, looking at the other opportunities out there, you know, and being in, you know, being an entrepreneur, you're in a state of constant questioning. And, you know, there comes a point in time where it's like, you know, you have to truly believe that what you are doing can get you there. And in knowing that you have a product that's unique, that people are buying. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not like we have it out there and we're not generating sales. It was always like a momentum. It just kept growing. And so, you know, if you have a product that no one's buying and you're not generating sales, you have to question yourself. You know, although you've built the product, you know, are you marketing it? Are you generating sales? Can you even sustain yourself with this business? You know, and it's a lot easier in your 20s when you're not married, you don't have any kids, you don't have a mortgage, you don't have expenses. Hence, that's why Combinator is awesome, because, you know, kids can live off nothing and build something, work 24 hours a day. You know, but when you're a little bit older, you have to generate money and you have to generate an income. And so, you know, you gotta, you know, my friend Dale, I sold one of my sites to him a couple years ago, and he goes, you know what? He goes, you can't eat your dogs. I'm like, what do you mean by that? He goes, you know, when you're building a business, he goes, you can't constantly take the cash out and steal that money away from the business that needs it. Don't eat your dogs. He goes, when you're building a company, reinvest that cash back into the business to grow it to the next level. So that was a lesson I learned from Dale. Don't eat your dogs.
Let's talk about a few more marketing techniques. We talked about the letter, and I see that not only is I see the card that you've written out. I have a screenshot here that you sent me before. You learn, though, from more than just WooFoo. You learn something from HelloFacts about marketing. Yeah. What did you get from them that maybe we can copy from you?
Yeah. You know, I relate this to, like, the larger company that's known for these strategies. And so Zynga.
Sorry, you relate this to what?
I relate it to, like, a larger company that, you know, has kind of claimed that strategy, if you will. And so Zynga is known for gamification. Mm-hmm. And so HelloFacts, when you sign up for HelloFacts, they say, hey, you know, get free faxes. And, you know, if you like us on Facebook, get 5 free faxes. If you tweet us, get 5 free faxes. You know, hey, give us a, you know, create a password. Oh, we already did that. So congratulations, you know. And so it's just kind of like a simple onboarding process to make it fun, but also it's a way for you to turn your users into traffic drivers. And so, you know, I thought HelloFacts is a great example, because you're giving a reward for them tweeting it or sharing it or importing their Gmail contacts. Because the hardest part is, how do you acquire a user? How do you acquire a customer? And if you're paying for it, it can get expensive. And this goes to, I think, what Dropbox did when they originally started. You know, they were going to go broke, and they realized, you know, they were doing pay-per-click and SEO and all the traditional media and marketing. And what they realized was it was about $400, give or take, to acquire a customer. But they're selling a $10 a month product, they'll go broke quick. And so they had to figure something else out and enter their referral program, which, you know, dramatically, you know, grew their business, you know, 25% month over month. And, you know, they're $10 billion today. And so it's just, you know, I know we're getting on a marketing thing here, but it's applying those same strategies these large companies have applied to their businesses. We wanted to apply that stuff.
So you have it now in your business where when people tweet or like you on Facebook, then you give them some credits.
Yep. Yeah. So when somebody comes in, and we're doing a lot of testing all the time. So, you know, people can go in and we have kind of our, I guess, Zynga gamification thing where, hey, if you tweet us, you know, you get 20 free messages or 15 free messages if you like us on Facebook and LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff. And so
you know, figured it out with Infusionsoft, so we could actually manage it and, you know, issue the credits and do all that on the back end.
Okay, yeah, I see it here. You actually sent me a screenshot of your automated marketing. If people like you, at least at the time that you created it, you gave them 10 credits. If they referred a friend, they got 100 credits. If they created a group, they got 25 credits, and it was all automated and ready to go. How about one other one? What's another bit of marketing that you did? Or that you copied from someone else?
Yeah, so webinars for us are a great way to convert prospects to customers.
Webinars. You're saying that webinars, many software entrepreneurs say it's education. I'm in the software business. I'm not in the content marketing business. How do you use webinars?
To sell, you know, but also to educate. And so, you know, a lot of companies, there's a problem. And the big problem in today is content marketing, right? I got to do more blog posts and I got to do this stuff. But, you know, why not use a different modality to educate, but also to make an offer, to get them to upgrade or to try your product? And we use webinars. In fact, I don't do them anymore because we automated our webinars. But they're a great way to have a capture audience, to educate them, but then also to get them to buy, you know, to make a special offer to those people. You know, it's interesting. If we can bring on 50 or 100 people on a webinar, I know that we can convert probably 15, 20% of those people to get a trial or to make a purchase of credits. And so it's a great way to just, again, you have their attention, you know, turn it into a selling tool. And it's not a way to you know, like hardcore pitch, but it's a great way to just transition them to the obvious step, which is to actually use your product and upgrade.
What do you do your webinar about? You're not doing it about your software because people don't want to watch a webinar that teaches about software, right? About your software. They want to learn something else. What do you teach them?
So the one we have on right now is getting started with Call Loop. You know, the biggest thing people want to know.
Oh, really? So it is just getting started with Call Loop?
Yeah.
Okay.
So just getting started with Call Loop, we get basically a walkthrough of the software. Here's how to create a group, here's what a broadcast is, and you know, we just walk them through the entire software. And the transition is then, hey, so here's how you buy credits, here's how you can purchase a keyword, you know, here's how you can do that. And hey, if you upgrade today, you'll also get these extra bonuses. So, you know, we just a simple way to see how the software works and then try the now there's obviously different segments that want, you know, specific information.
Oh, sorry, Chris, the connection just keeps getting worse and worse on us. Do you happen to be downloading anything in the background? Maybe Dropbox is going off? Maybe someone else in the office is downloading Game of Thrones as we're having this conversation, or uploading it. That's really where the trouble could come in. So I see. The webinar really is about how to use Call Loop. And as they're learning it, they're getting an understanding of the features, and they're deciding that many of them are deciding that they want to sign up and buy it. Where can someone take the webinar if they're curious about how you do it?
Sign up for Call Loop.
Where is it?
Go to callloop.com and sign up there.
Basically, so if I just add my email address to, as you say, the upper left right now, claim your free Call Loop account now. As soon as I do that for free, that's where I get on the webinar.
Yeah, actually a day later, you'll get an invitation to the webinar, register for that, and then you can select. So the cool thing is you can select multiple times per day. So we run it Tuesday, Thursdays, so you can do it for 12 or 3 or 8 p.m.
I see. So I can pick the time of day that works for me. I'm only repeating it not because I'm not fully getting it, but because the connection is bad and I want to make sure that it's coming in clearly for people. Okay. Do people who watch the automated webinar, do they know that it's automated or do they think that it's real time?
Some people do. I mean, we just say it's a webinar.
Okay.
I don't say it's a live webinar. But you know, some people do. I mean, if you know the software, then it's fake.
What's the software that you use to run the webinar in replay mode?
Stealth Seminar.
What is it?
Stealth Seminar.
Stealth Seminar. Yes, Sean Malarkey talked about that here on Mixergy as part of his launch. All right. Here's what I think we need to do.
because of the connection, I think we need to end the interview right here. But if people want to follow up with you, is there a place for them to go and follow up? Is there a way for them to get to know the real Chris, the man, without all the Andrew jokes to interrupt him and without the bad internet connection? What's a good way for them to do it?
Just go to callloop.com. I don't have a blog per se and a personal blog, but okay. callloop.com, or you can check out automizeit.com, which is kind of the umbrella of everything. So,
what is it? Automize it?
Automizeit.com.
Let me see. You know what? And I didn't even get to ask you about producthunt.com. I got to ask you about that. Why is producthunt.com sending you so much traffic?
They are.
They are. Oh, here we go. I know what it is. Product Hunt is a daily leaderboard of the best new products. I guess you're not even aware that you were one of the best new products on there, and so that's why you were at the top.
Cool. Check it out.
That's something for us to know. All right. I thought maybe I discovered some kind of connection there. The other one is, oh, here's what else you do that works really well. I'm going to say this because the connection's kind of bad on your end, but it's still very worth talking about. Integrations. Marketplace.infusionsoft.com sending you traffic. Where is the other one? MailChimp somewhere in here. Connect.mailchimp.com. Because you integrate with all these different services, they help send traffic to you, right? Not just traffic, real customers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I signed up to check out. Sorry?
I mean, their business model is to do email marketing, and by both on Call Loop, their customer can do text and voice and, you know, all that stuff. So
without having to do it themselves. All right, the website is callloop.com. And if you guys are out there and you're using Duolingo, if you're using it, not just kind of hanging out, but really using Duolingo, I would like to encourage my friend Chris to keep using Duolingo. So please add him on Duolingo. His name is It's Bisson, right?
It's Bisson, yeah.
Bisson? I like that, actually. Now I get it. It's like it's on. It's Bisson. Add him on there. Encourage him to play, because he is the only person who encourages me to play. And because he hasn't been on Duolingo, look at me. I got zero. None of my friends are on there. So add him and then add me, and maybe we can all finally start competing.
Yeah, I think the competition on there.
Yeah, it encourages me. Back when you were using it, I was using it so much more because I'd get up in the morning and I'd do it, and then I'd send you a text message to say, aha, I got you, and then you'd send me a text message, or maybe you wouldn't. I just log in because you're much more modest. I go, damn it. Got me. So I'll show him, and then meanwhile, neither one of us now showing anyone. I've got hardly any points this week. Wait, there we go. All right, go check it out and check out Call Loop. Thank you so much for doing this interview, Chris, and the previous one. Thank you all out there in the audience for watching it. Bye.